This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
By the Book on BFM 89.9.
Hello, you're listening to Buy the Book with me, Sharmila Ganesan, and as always, my fellow lover of Ishiguro's works, Lee Chui Lin.
Hello.
You are in for, I hope, a treat today because we're going to be talking about Kazuo Ishiguro's latest book, Clara and the Sun, and it is our monthly book club episode. So we're also joined by a third reviewer, Mark De Fuiche, book reviewer and also first-timer to Kazuo Ishiguro's works. Thanks for joining us, Mark.
Thank you for having me.
So Clara and the Sun is interesting because it's Ishiguro's first novel post winning the Nobel Prize in 2017. And in true Ishiguro fashion, it kind of isn't anything at all like his novel before this, but then in other ways, it is.
Yeah, so I don't know how much exactly we should say of the story such as it is, because there's not a lot of story in the sense that the narrative is not the main driver of the book, strangely enough. It's more, I think, the setting and the kinds of ideas that are being put forth by the presence of Clara, who, as we meet her at the start of the book, is an AF. And so essentially that means she is an artificial friend for teenagers. The book is set in some sort of future, although it isn't exactly clear when it is. It's recognizably still our planet. There are elements of the setting that are very recognizable to us. But it's really about Clara and the relationship that she builds with the girl that she becomes friends with, Josie.
And Mark, when I first asked you to join us for this review, you made a point of telling me you weren't particularly familiar with his works. But then you actually told me, oh, I read it and I really love the book. I wanted to ask you what sort of convinced you into liking the book, really.
Oh, that's a big question. It was an intriguing plot line. I'm quite interested in technology. So the imminent approach of artificial intelligence is already here in certain forms, if we wanted to extend that to it. But that he engages with that and then extrapolates and sees what might become in the future and how humans will live more with technology. Already our generation, we've had such a change in our lives as how we live with technology. And then he takes it, as I say, a step forward into the imaginary, but that intrigued me a lot, and I found she was a very relatable character as well. There's a sincerity and a clarity, for want of a better word, since that's her name. There's a transparency about her, but that's quite beguiling as well.
So it's interesting because a lot of the things that we've just said is very much the stuff of sci-fi, right? And the thing that this book isn't, though, is that it's not overtly sci-fi. Again, when you said that it's very much of our world, for instance, and this is something that's often been brought up in the context of the way Kazuo Ishiguro writes, which is that he engages with what is typically genre conventions, particularly when it comes to creating worlds, but then extends that into, he's much more, to me, it feels like he's much more interested in the study of humanity and humanness within those worlds rather than the world itself. And this book was very much that.
Yeah, I think that there is always a sense of melancholy around Kazuo Ishiguro's writing, and that was a very pervasive quality in this book as well. It was a very melancholic book, and it's melancholic, I think, because it is told from the perspective of Clara, who is all the things that you described, Mark. She is beguiling, she is transparent, she is sincere to a fault, and yet you know from the beginning that there is also this layer of artificiality, or is there, to what Clara is. You know that she's not a person. You know that the way she thinks, the way she processes things is a product of science and technology, so to speak. And yet the tenderness with which she approaches the human world, the way she's almost anthropological about us, her fascination with the city, with the shop that she's in, later on with the home that she enters and the family that she lives with. I think that tenderness is part of what makes this question of humanity so interesting, because it isn't as simple, quote-unquote simple, as the kinds of pondering about sentience, you know, that we're used to. This is a different sort of thing. This is the sentience of emotions, of feelings, and that point about sincerity and Clara, I think, is really important because she's on a quest and the quest has almost nothing to do with her. And that's an interesting quality for a lead character.
That is an interesting thing for a lead character. Indeed, the whole selflessness and how that's essentially programmed into her. That's her given personality. And then we see how that not quite collides, but maybe it's highlighted by the later version of artificial friends that are in the shop, who seem to be much more self-centered. This kind of one is more pro-social and one is more selfish. So we can see it as a kind of a left-wing, right-wing dichotomy, if you want to look at those terms, that there's a class division even among these artificial friends. I found that quite interesting. And then how that reflected, again, the class division, which maybe we'll get onto to later, but that's reflected between the other, we'll say, human characters, although I have question marks about that, which we might get to later.
I have a question for both of you, though, which is related to the world that this book occupies. Because it is told through the perspective of Clara, our knowledge of it is limited, and it's kind of left to what Clara can glean from what the different people are saying, especially the adults, what they're saying about the world they occupy. And there were parts where, I mean, I know that it's a purposeful storytelling technique and it worked for the way the story panned out. But there were parts of me that wanted to know more about the kinds of conflicts that existed, the kinds of issues that they were talking about. And I just wondered whether you both got enough of the world or did you want more? Because it's a relatively slim book.
That's an interesting question. And I think it goes back to, again, what I said earlier about the lack of sci-fi-ness of this book. I think if this had been a different writer and a different kind of book, I might have felt like there wasn't enough world building and it's a bit of a cheat that, oh, you don't bother explaining the parts that might have been a little too difficult to explain. And therefore, you just give us enough that we are supposed to fill in the gaps. But somehow, because of how skillfully the story is told in this and how the word that you just used, purposeful, because of how purposefully he reveals bits and pieces of that world to us, it truly feels like you're discovering the world in the same way Clara is. And I think that's an important part of the journey you take with her.
I felt that very much around the scene with the taxi drivers. For me, in a future where you have sentient solar-powered humanoids, and we already have almost self-driving cars, that in this future or alternate reality, that there are taxis with actual real flesh and blood taxi drivers who get out and fight each other. It seems to me that fighting scene was maybe a little bit manipulated then, just to show that Clara couldn't relate to their anger because she was incapable of feeling that anger. It felt convincing on the first read through, but afterwards I felt that it was a little bit clumsy from my point of view.
So it's interesting that you brought up the humans, Mark, because for me, that contrast between the humans and Clara is almost sort of the central push and pull of the book, in the sense that a lot of the emotions that Clara has, the way she empathizes with the world, the way she understands what love might mean, is in such sharp contrast to how humans feel it. And it almost feels like Clara is the better version of us in many ways. And I wonder whether even what you just said, that even that scene, a part of it is meant to be that. The reason that she can't understand those emotions is because her sense of empathy or emotionality is somehow above those kinds of things.
It's worth saying at this point that Clara is regarded as exceptional even among the AFs, you know, because when we talk about it, I think it's very easy to assume that we're talking about robots and models and computers, and therefore you can classify everything according to the generation that it belongs to. But it's actually stated over and over again, and Clara proves it time and time again, that even among her generation, she is regarded as exceptionally thoughtful, that she has close observational skills, that she is perfect for, and this is the manager of the shop's term, a certain kind of child, a certain kind of sensitive child. And so I think that is just important to know about Clara, and maybe an important element also when we are talking about what it is that sets the book apart or what it is that sets the world building apart. And that is the ability to look at the world through this particular lens.
So we're talking about Kazuo Ishiguro's latest novel, Clara and the Sun. It is our monthly book club episode. And so we have with us Mark DeFuiche. Let us know whether you've read it. Are you a fan of Ishiguro's works? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio, or write to us at buythebook@bfm.my.
Bia Fakiran Malayang, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Welcome back. You're listening to Buy the Book with Sharmila and Lynn. And we're joined today by Mark DeFuiche. It's our monthly book club, and we are talking about Kazuo Ishiguro's Clara and the Sun, which came out just quite recently. And it's also his first post-Nobel Prize novel. So we've talked quite a bit about the world and a bit about Clara as well. I really wanted to get into the story, or rather maybe the almost lack thereof. What was that forward push for you? Because for me, I know, Lynn, earlier you called it a quest, but it very much, for me, a lot of the pleasure of this book was actually discovering Clara's point of view and trying to understand her point of view. And that sounds odd, but I almost felt like it didn't matter so much where the story was going as long as I was with Clara on it.
My forward push was actually the melancholy of it. And I know that that's kind of a sad thing to say in and of itself, but being familiar with Kazuo Ishiguro and therefore being familiar with the kinds of stories that he enjoys telling, which tend to be about this very thing, about a sense of loss, about a fulfillment of duty and purpose, of not always being appreciated or known by the world around you, of being forgotten, I was feeling kind of that creep of emotion. And so I just wanted that emotional resolution. So while I can definitely appreciate it for what it says about future thinking, for what it says about philosophy, actually for me, reading this book was quite an emotional experience. And that was the push forward.
I think it was maybe the metaphorical elements. I think any book, in a way, it's always going to be read with what the reader brings to it. But you could bring a lot to this book and take it out of it. One thing I was thinking of was her visual distortions, for me, was one of the more interesting parts. And that happened at several different times throughout the book.
But the way Clara views the world, right?
Not just in terms of her worldview, but in terms of her actual visual.
Yes. So the closest I can describe it is that she often literally sees the world in grids.
Yes. There's also an element of her vision breaking down, being blinded. And that sent me back to Plato with his cave and people seeing the shadows from the firelight. And then when they emerge from the cave and at first they're blinded, and then they come to a new, clearer understanding of reality. And I found it very easy to kind of layer that on top of a reading of this book, that it, in a way, metaphorically, he's talking about the same things. Things are revealed, and of course, this blinding light of the sun comes with different senses. A very heliocentric book, but Clara sees the sun as some sort of a benevolent being, and the sun plays a very important role then later in Josie's life, the young girl that she essentially belongs to, which is another problematic relationship. In a way, we're close to slavery. We buy another being who serves us. And I think that's not something that's deeply explored, but it's certainly something that's suggested and hinted at.
So I'm glad you brought that up. And it reminded me so much of one of the novels that everyone talks about in relation to Ishiguro, which is Remains of the Day, which also explores that notion of what it means to serve someone. And you're right that this book doesn't necessarily, it does and it doesn't. I don't know how I feel about it. There are parts where it feels like it's approaching a question of, is this ethical? Is this moral? But then it also almost sidesteps it with a, but this is what Clara gets joy out of. And so it's both problematic and not, in that weird way that Ishiguro manages to often do. I did like that the book makes you think about these things very often, the power distance between people. So again, another theme in the book is this idea of genetic superiority, for instance, and how there are differences between those who have it and those who don't, the differences between the AFs and humans. And so there are all of these layers. So I don't think the book is unaware. I don't think the writer is unaware of them. I think he just prefers to lay it out there and let us kind of make what we want of it.
I think the frequency point is very important because it is, you get frequent reminders. Clara often, in her words, gives privacy, and that could involve turning her face towards a fridge while people have dinner. There is a very, very fraught encounter between the teenagers where it essentially lapses into bullying because of these sorts of social differences. And it's very clear. Clara might not understand it, but she's observing it so closely that we know exactly what's going on. And I think the book is very insistent, actually, on you understanding that there are these power differences and that they do exist. But it is not interested in laying out a solution, as becomes quite clear, I think, by as the story goes on, by its resolution even. There aren't any true resolutions to be had. And I don't think that Ishiguro is necessarily interested in giving those to you. It's more almost a world that is being drawn in broad strokes, and your level of comfort is for you to determine.
So how much did the writing itself play into how you experienced this book? Because for me, the writing was surprisingly simple and surprisingly accessible because it's from Clara's point of view. So it feels almost like it doesn't have a presence, which is a funny thing to say about a novel.
Well, for me, as you know, this was my first time reading Ishiguro, so that didn't jump out at me as being a contrast to any of his previous works. But certainly the style and the simplicity, I think, fitted very well with the naivety and openness of the protagonist.
Ishiguro tends towards simple. You know, in general, his writing is generally quite clean, not spare, but very clean. And I think that this book matches that. I at first wasn't aware of, to your point, Mark, earlier about vision, I wasn't aware that that was going to happen. So that was what initially threw me off. And I think that it was great because it exhibits Clara's alienness. You know, at the start, when you meet her, she's almost like a child. She's learning something new every day. She's trying to understand what she sees from her store window. She's trying to understand the interactions between her and the other AFs, how people view her. And so you start to feel somewhat comfortable with Clara. And then the minute the issue with vision starts to appear, that she sees grids appear, that she sees boxes and different things are boxed into separate spaces, I think the writing of those passages is particularly interesting because it is so alienating and compared to the rest of the book, which again is quite emotional.
Alienating, and frankly for me, the first few times it happened, I was confused. I turned back pages wondering if I had missed something because they just describe it from a particular point of view, right? And I was like, wait, did I miss? Are they watching each other on CCTV? Like, what's happening, right? But then it kind of morphs into something really human because the first time, and people say this all the time, Clara, you observe things much better than everyone else. And then we get an insight into how that happens because they talk about how in that grid, she sees different parts almost of what a person might feel. So an emotion is broken down into various components so that it's sort of simple versions of something. I loved that because, as you said, it's a completely inhuman way of processing emotion, but in a way that wasn't bad or creepy, almost seemed like if only more of us could understand that you can be sad and happy at the same time.
I like the scene with the teenagers where it breaks down into grids and she sees the mouths and she sees the hands and she's interpreting different meanings from both. For me, that was very suggestive of the duplicitous nature of humans, that maybe the mouths are saying one thing, but the body language is saying something different, and how she's analyzing both of those at the same time and then trying to read between those lines or make sense of the discrepancy between words and actions.
Also, In the world that it's set in, right, the teenagers in question may not actually be as aware as Clara is of those discrepancies. Mm. That's the whole point, that she is more socially observational and attuned than these teenagers that she belongs to, you know, and is supposed to assist. And that's quite clear in the very deep awkwardness that pervades those interactions, which, yeah, I think was really fascinating.
So I just wanted to wrap this up by talking about the fact that Ishiguro wrote this right before the whole world dropped into the pandemic. And I believe that the editing and the final phases of this was completed during the pandemic. But for me, especially because of the headspace that I've been in, this felt like a really great read for this point in time. Something about both the isolation, but also the closeness that it gives you to people. I highly recommend it to anybody who wants a thoughtful read, not an escapist read, but one that doesn't leave you feeling... The melancholia is there, but I think it's also a comforting read in many ways.
I'm inclined to agree. I mean, if only because I thought it was a beautiful book, and it's good company is what it is. Once I started the book, I found it to be one that I constantly wanted to return to. And that is a great quality in terms of having a companion to see you through the very, you know, frankly, weird times that we're living in.
I found the book in itself very accessible. In terms of the time, again, back to the teenagers and their lack of socialization, that they had to be actually brought together to learn social skills and how to interact with each other at the same time where in our real world, teenagers are doing their schooling through Zoom and such like. That seemed very pertinent to me. But I really appreciated on one level the simplicity, but also the ambiguity of the whole book. You can read lots into it if you want to, or you can just read it as almost like a fairy tale type quality to it.
We've been talking about Clara and the Sun by Kazuo Ishiguro. This has been our monthly book club, and we've been reviewing the book with our guest today, who is a book reviewer, Mark DeFuicher. Let us know if you've read the book. Are you a fan of Ishiguro? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio, or write to us at buythebook@bfm.my. Brings us to footnotes, and because we've spent the better part of the show talking about a book that was very new to Mark, we thought we would close off by discussing this idea of a gateway book, or being introduced to an author through a particular book, and how that shapes the way you relate to his or her works, and how you continue to read in terms of their body of work. So, Mark, I think we're going to start with you and ask whether this book, Clara and the Sun, has perhaps interested you in reading more of Ishiguro.
It certainly has. I mean, he's not unfamiliar to me insofar as I've seen the two movies made of his book, but that doesn't count. You can't tell the writing style from a movie, even if you can get the basic plot. But certainly I would look forward to reading more of his work. In terms of your question of an initial access to a book, it's just coincidental two books spring to mind that are also by Japanese writers, Haruki Murakami and Sayaka Murata. Sayaka Murata's book, Convenience Store Woman, is, I think, her first book translated into English. And it was a huge success. And it's a wild book. It's a beautiful book. It's very, very nice. And then recently another book of hers was translated. And I said to myself then, if Earthlings had been the first book of Murata's that I had read, it would also have been the last book of hers I would have read. Whereas I read in the meantime, that was more representative of her usual work, because she has many books still written in Japanese that haven't been translated yet. So I'm very glad that I came at her through Convenience Store Woman rather than through Earthlings.
But that's the thing, isn't it? It's I don't know. I have mixed feelings about this, because with Clara and the Sun, it's such a perfect entry, actually, into Ishiguro's work. It's sort of a culmination of a lot of themes that he's been exploring. It's very representative of his style and his storytelling. But I think with most authors, you can reasonably say that there are major works and minor works. And in some instances, I think when you read the minor works and you continue to enjoy them, that's how you know that this is an author for you. That this is how you know you can explore their bibliography and feel quite happy with it. On the flip side, there are some where you read the major works and then later on you go to the minors and you think, oh, I don't know if this works for me. 'Cause I've had different experiences with that. My first encounter with Neil Gaiman was something that I think most people would consider quite slight, and that was Anansi Boys, which isn't even one of his main bodies. I think it's sort of an offshoot of American Gods. It's almost a sequel to that. Very different. But I enjoyed it so much that I went back and read everything else. So I think there isn't exactly one way to do it. Sometimes if you want to short circuit the whole thing, I think reading the book that is quote unquote most representative is a good idea. In other times, going through the slighter works, I think, can be a lighter introduction to an author.
So that's interesting. And I'm glad you brought up Gaiman, and Mark, you brought up Murakami, and both are writers that I was going to mention. So I'm glad. With Gaiman, interestingly, I think that a question of style is very important. If you're not used to what he does, which is this sort of drawing on mythology and folklore and weaving them into modern life, if you jump into something like American Gods, I know many people who have been put off because that's where they started, because it was just too dense and too Gaiman-y, if that's a word. Whereas something like Neverwhere is probably a better entry point, because it's sort of much more standalone, doesn't require you to see connections that you may not be familiar with already. That said, with Murakami, and I'm not a big Haruki Murakami fan, I have to say, and I think it has to do with the first book that I read by him, which is The Wind-Up Bird Chronicles. Something about the style, something about the vagueness, something about the way he wrote women just never appealed to me. And people keep telling me I should have started with something else, and maybe that's true. I don't think I've ever gone back to reading a Murakami, just because I lie. I've read his short stories, which I find a lot more manageable, but I cannot do a Murakami novel.
I had very similar experience with Norwegian Wood, was my first approach to him. And I didn't like it at all. And people said, no, you should have started with something else. Well, meanwhile, I've heard other people say that's their favorite one. Then I gave him a second chance. I read Killing Commandatore. And what you brought up about his treatment of women, that book made me feel very, very uncomfortable about the way he portrays the young girl in the story. And apparently his latest book has come in for a lot of flack now as well about his, let's name it, misogyny, because it's a word that has been used frequently in reviews of his latest book and even in other reviews of his book. So I find a lot of reverence for him. I hear a lot of reverence, but that doesn't resonate with me. Like you, Sharmila, I wouldn't claim to be a Murakami fan at all.
So what makes us give authors that we didn't enjoy on the first go a second try? Because so far, at least, there is a theme of, I tried this, I was told I did it wrong, and so now I have to go and, you know, go back and revisit this author that I didn't enjoy all that much. And I find that sometimes it's a sense of reading pride. It's almost like, okay, fine, I know that this is a big author and a lot of people see value in their work, so I should try. I am also not a huge Murakami person, and
this has inadvertently turned into a panel of this is why we don't like Murakami.
No, but for all the reasons that we've said already, and I'm less inclined to keep giving it a go. I think for all these things, sometimes for all these things, and also in some instances because I'm being pushed to do it, or I feel like I'm being pushed to do it. You did it wrong. Try this, and so in some ways it works. Other times it just completely backfires, I think.
I will admit that I almost never read a second book by an author I didn't like the first time around. It's very, very rare. I've done it with maybe short story writers, young adult writers, books that require less energy and investment. But if I spent a few days on a novel and came out not loving it, particularly if I didn't like very specific things like the writing style, it's very unlikely that I'll revisit them.
I have come back to authors after, we'll say, decades. And we come to a book after decades, obviously, as a very different reader, as a very different person. So, again, we're bringing different things to the book where I've got a greater appreciation having perhaps a tiny little bit more maturity as a reader over the years when reading some works that I might not have fully appreciated when younger, just simply because you don't have the life experience to fully appreciate what's been articulated.
Yes, that is true. Perhaps I feel like I'm a lot more willing to give a chance to a book or a writer that a certain amount of time has gone by, because I realize that I've changed and what I like or what I enjoy has changed. I don't think I'm as amenable if I just read something by someone last year and you want me to commit to something again this year. I was just going to wrap up this conversation by asking, is there a particular author that you've been introduced to that you are looking forward to reading something of? And you kind of dampened my enthusiasm a little bit, Mark, because mine was going to be Sayaka Murata's Earthling. I loved Convenience Store Woman, and a colleague has just offered to lend me Earthling. So that's going to be my next post-Gateway author book.
Without any spoilers, I would simply say brace yourself.
And what about you? Is there anything in particular that, is there a second book on the horizon for you?
I mean, there's one book that I want to get, but it's overpriced and it's not, I can't get it where I am, is Lydia Davis's latest book, which is more essays and things like that. I've read pretty much everything of hers to date. And a lot of people don't get Lydia Davis. I think people underestimate just how quirky she is, and what might seem like very banal prose is actually very tongue-in-cheek. So certainly I'd be looking forward to getting my hands sooner or later, probably later, on her book.
What about you, Lynn?
Nothing that comes to mind. I think I've been reading a lot of first time to me authors, actually, and most of them I have really enjoyed. And most of them actually we've also talked about on the show. So nothing in particular stands out. I will also just say that if Clara and the Sun is your first Kazuo Ishiguro, if you're planning to pick it up and you enjoy it, then you're in for a treat, because he has got a lot of other books that you will also very likely like.
That is a great note to end this on. And it's always great to try a new author. So I'd highly recommend just going out of your comfort zone at any point that you feel like it. Let us know what your gateway books were to a particular author. What was the first thing you read that made you want to read more by someone? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio, or write to us at buythebook@bfm.my.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.